Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It's really nice to have, I consider him a friend of a number of years, and a friend of yours as well. He's very, very astute in his ability to synthesize the big picture. He makes wonderful, dramatic little video presentations. We're going to play one tonight, the newest one. His name is Stefan Verstappen, and it's been, I don't know how many years since he's been on. Welcome back, Stefan. Great to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me back, Jeff. It's been a long time, and I'm happy to be back.
You betcha. Did you ever, now the last time you were on, and I know our listeners, some of them don't miss many programs, and they'll remember, you were talking about trying to move to, I think it was North Carolina. Did you ever make that move? Did that ever happen? Where, generally speaking, where are you right now?
I'm in southwestern Ontario.
Okay.
North of Lake Erie, so I'm about 4 hours from Cleveland.
You're still a Canuck. Okay.
But up in Canada. No, I never made it into the United States. Jeff, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. You know, when I grew up here in Toronto in the 60s and 70s, we'd often drive from Toronto to Buffalo, New York, sometimes because the bars were open later and sometimes because there were, you know, Bruce Springsteen was playing down there. And when we crossed the border, the Canadian-American border, over Niagara Falls, usually we went to Niagara Falls and across the border into upper New York State.
Right.
There was like a toll booth at the side of the road. And you stopped, and the customs agent would say, "Where are you going? What are you doing?" And then they would wave you on through. On a rare occasion, they might ask you for a driver's license. In those days, it wasn't a photo ID. It was just a piece of paper, you know, with your name and address typed on it. And so it would take you 2 minutes to cross the border. Well, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. This time when I tried to cross the border, first of all, they somehow had built a highway that filtered everybody towards the customs. So once you got on this highway, you couldn't get off. There was no off-ramp. And you were stuck on the highway for like 5 miles until you got to the border. Now, when I started approaching the border,
You couldn't get off. This is pretty damn funny. So, in other words, let's say you're carrying contraband and you get cold feet and you want to get off. You can't get off. You're shuffling right toward the border. I get it.
You see, because I had my cats with me, and they were on the front seat of the U-Haul truck. And I wanted to put them in the back because just as I was leaving, one of my friends said, "Well, do you have vaccines for the cats?" I said, "No." And she said, "Well, they'll probably stop you for not having vaccines for the cats." I don't know, Jeff, you know, the whole reason I went at that time of the year was to, there was still a small window opening that you could enter the United States without getting a vax. Mm-hmm. And they closed it in December, and I was there last week in November. And anyways, I wanted to put the cats in the back of the truck, but I realized I couldn't get off the highway. And as you approached the border, I'm talking 80-foot fence, barbed wire on the top.
Come on.
Klieg lights. And then on two occasions, they snapped your photograph.
Now, wait, 80 feet tall. Is this a chain link fence? What's
chain link fence. Uh-huh. Well, maybe I'm exaggerating 80 feet, probably 60 feet. I mean, it was this huge fence.
Said, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And anyways, it was like an armed encampment. It was like something you see from a science fiction movie, you know, where they had this big wall and all these lights and armed guards walking all over. This is the Canadian-U.S. border, for Christ's sakes. You know, 30 years ago, you walked across the border, you said hello to the customs guard, and he'd wave you on through. I mean, it was – but now, oh, no, now everything has to be, 1984 level of terror. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so no, they wouldn't let me in, Jeff. They refused my visa application. It's a long story. It was a nightmare getting my passport was a nightmare, and trying to apply for a visa because all that stuff was shut down. You couldn't go to the American embassy anymore and get it. You had to show up on the border and let the customs agent decide on the spot whether he wants to let you in or not. And so it's a crapshoot, you know. Uh-huh. You get some jerk that wants to make your life miserable, and he says no, you know. And the first guy that interviewed me said yes, but then he went to his superior and they said, oh, no. But, you know, I was there at the customs and the border waiting area for about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And in that 2 hours, about 3 million Somalian warlords were welcomed into the country, okay?
Yeah,
driven to a nice hotel, given money and a place to stay. But
this is the international globalist elite taking down the nation state of the U.S. and Canada. They're destroying them. These people are being brought. You all have to remember this. They're being brought in here around the clock. They're not being forced to take the shots. I don't even think they're being asked if they want to take the shots. They are not just invaders. You must begin to link this word with the term invader. They are invader replacements. They are being brought in here to replace white Western Christian men and women who are going to die, unfortunately. That's the plan.
Yes, it is. And, you know, that's why I wasn't allowed into the country, because I'm a law-abiding, straight, white man who's, you know, written 8 books, who's, you know, I've received awards from Ventura, California, for my contribution to their public art. But, no, I'm somehow a threat to America. But, you know, 35 million... And I'm telling you, these are the worst people in the world they're shipping in here. This is not good stuff that they're bringing in.
Oh, they're flushing their toilet.
They are flushing their toilets. It's just like what happened in Cuba during the Cuban, float?
The Mariel Boat
when Castro emptied out all the jails and sent them all to Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I didn't make it in there. So what happened then, Jeff, is because, of course, I gave up my apartment. I mean, I'm sitting there with a U-Haul with some furniture and a year's supply of food, and I had to leave my firearms behind because I couldn't bring them into the country. That was another whole story. It used to be that you could go across the border and bring your firearms. Mm-hmm. And no, of course, that's gone. And then it used to be that you could drop your firearms with a firearm dealer here, and they would ship it to a firearm dealer in America. And then you could go, once you're in America, you can go there, show your identification to get your firearms. And that's gone too. I called all the firearm dealers. Well, not all of them. I called about 4 of them, and they all said, no, they're all pissed off because Biden just passed a law that no longer allowed to ship any kind of firearm materials. And they're mad because they said they can't even ship a rifle scope across the border. So
it's just slightly excessive. God, how much worse could it get, short of taking all the guns away from people? I you know, and good luck with that. Every single month, I think it's, let me remember, I think it's 18 straight months where over 1 million firearms a month have been sold to Americans. 1 million legally sold.
That's good.
Oh, yes. The more the better.
That's good.
Second Amendment has kept a lot of people alive by stopping a lot of crimes with thugs who have weapons.
Absolutely.
A lot of them. Yeah.
Well, you know, for those who follow this sort of thing, the safest states and towns you can live in are ones that allow concealed carry weapons.
Absolutely. Look at Kennesaw, Georgia. The city council passed a law that every household, every residence in the city had to have a firearm for protection. The crime rate went down to virtually zero in that town. True story. Yeah? Look it up. Kennesaw, Georgia. You can find
it. Yes, I know the story, Jeff. Yeah. And which is what's so infuriating here in Canada, because at the same time they're importing, what, 3 million West African drug lords a year, they're disarming the Canadian public. About 2 months after the events they're trying to get into the U.S., Justin Trudeau, or I should say Justin Castro, banned all handgun sales. There was like a two-week grace period. So I immediately got online and checked the local gun dealers, because I knew as soon as I heard that announcement, I knew that they're going to be sold out really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I better get online and put in an order, because, you know, I do have a pistol, but I wanted a 9mm. I wanted a service pistol, if you know what I mean, a full-size.
Sure. Well, like a Glock 17 or a Glock 19. I understand.
Exactly. So I got a Glock 17 clone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the cheapest pistol available. And but they were sold out like within 4 hours. Everything. Every online gun store, every bricks and mortar gun store, they were sold out of all the guns in like 2-3 right. hours. Yeah.
Well, there's no finer handgun out there than a Glock. The others are, there's some very, very good guns out there, a lot of them. Just do your research, and if you don't have a firearm, you better get one. Get one. You're going to need
it. Yeah, I never really liked the look of a Glock when they first came out. It was all boxy, and
right.
and there were no external controls on it, you know, no safety, no cocking.
No safety. They have a slide lock and a magazine release, and that's about it.
And that's it, yeah. But now that I've gotten this one and I've been, you know, playing with it, I see now that it works, because you don't have to, you know, you can carry it around in the chamber.
No, simplicity. You don't have to chamber it. You know, you need to, you can, it takes just a second and a half to chamber around. I know that's enough to determine life and death in some cases, but
that's
if you
right.
want to have a round in it, have a round in it. Just make sure it's holstered properly.
Yeah, I mean, you can drop it. It's not going to go off, you know.
I think it's just a great gun. It's so damn durable, and it's the AK-47 of pistols.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the easy thing is you pull it and pull the trigger. That's it. Right. So no slot, you know, racking the slide, putting around in the chamber and turning off the safety.
To. No, yeah. no. People forget things in high stress moments. They forget
that's
to take
it.
The safety
that's the point,
off.
Right?
Whatever.
Yeah. So anyways, I ended up then. So now I'd given up my apartment. Because,
you went all the way. You were gone. You were going. I see. You did. You did it all. You pulled the plug. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I gave away a lot of my stuff. I know what you got a letter from one of the listeners saying that they were concerned about me giving away most of my stuff. But, you know, the thing is, Jeff, it's more of a spiritual exercise. I just wanted to lighten my load. I mean, do I really need to carry all this crap in a U-Haul and drive all the way down to North Carolina? And like, you know, when you look at it, and it's like Miyamoto Musashi says in his book, The Way of Walking Alone, if you haven't used it in a year, throw it away. So all the stuff that I had, I looked at it, and have I used this? Have I worn this? You know, this is crap that you drag around with you every time you move and everywhere you go. You're dragging this stuff around, you know, like 10-year-old IKEA furniture. Do I need to drag that with me?
It's just exactly like the tail of a comet. It just gets bigger and bigger.
Exactly. And so, you know, I rid myself of a lot of stuff. I'm down to nothing now. You know, my entire life possessions would fit into a small box van. But you know what? That's good for me. You know, Jeff, I'll be honest with you. I was thinking about it. The happiest times in my life were when everything I owned fit in a duffel bag. Because those were the times I was traveling the world, you know. Mm-hmm. I just had a shoulder bag. There was just enough clothes and a little bit of money and some extra underwear, you know. Mm-hmm. And did I miss having a whole bunch of crap? I didn't miss it at all. You're free. You can move. You can travel. So anyways, I got rid of a lot of this stuff, but still. Okay, so now I'm there in Niagara Falls. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I got nowhere to go. And by this time, I had lost the last of the few friends I still had in Canada. Because you know how that goes, Jeff, right?
I do.
You start telling the truth.
Yep.
And, you know, you try to live a life of virtue and morality, and everybody's suddenly threatened by you. And you warn them against certain medical procedures that they shouldn't get, and now they're really angry at you. So, so there I am. I'm at the, you know, I pulled into one of these, you know, box store parking lots, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I get in the back with the poor cats, you know, we had a picnic, I had to feed them, clean their litter box. And where have I got to go, Jeff? Nowhere. What am I going to do now?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
End of the road.
So I had one friend left, and they lived not too far. As a matter of fact, I had dropped my firearms off at their house because her husband, my other friend, he's got a gun safe and he's got a license. So I said, well, you know, I don't know. I can't take these with me. I'll just leave them with you. Mm-hmm. And if I come back, then I'll pick them up. But if I don't come back, I don't know, maybe we'll figure out some way to ship them back, or you can sell them or whatever. So I called them up and I said, well, you know, I got nowhere to go. So they let me stay in their basement for like 6 weeks. Now, this is winter time, you know. Mm-hmm. So I lived with them for 6 weeks until I could find an apartment. And I thought, I might as well find an apartment in the... Sorry about that. In the same small town that they live in. You got to stay close to people that you trust.
Yeah.
And where am I going to go? I could go anywhere in Canada, I guess, but what would the point be of moving somewhere else? So it took me 6 weeks to find an apartment here. And it's a small town, but actually the small town lines up with a lot of the advice I give people when they are asking me questions. Like a lot of people want to know, well, where can I move to? Where can I go? And my advice would always be, go out to the country, find a small town that's just big enough that has all the, you know, amenities you might need. You know, we got 6 pizza joints here. And, but small
Sunday
enough
off.
That you're,
I get it. Okay.
You're well away from diversity.
Uh-huh.
So that's where I am now. I mean, it's an all-white town. We are in Mennonite and Amish country. So, you know, we get the carriages going down the country road here all the time. It's very quaint. I like
nice.
It.
Nice.
And the people I stayed with, Jeff, you know, you don't know somebody until you live with them. I've learned that.
Somebody said that once. I remember that. I've heard that before. Yes. They also said, you don't really know someone until you divorce them.
Well, as someone who's been divorced twice, I can concur with that statement.
Yeah.
So anyways, now they had just started up a group, a community.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the apartment here, and I became a member of that community. And for the last year and a half, that's all I've been doing is working. Well, you know, I'm still making videos. I'm still writing. But mostly my effort is on the community. You know, I was just talking to Todd before we started, and you know, I've kind of turned a page. I am sick to death, Jeff, of fear porn. I'm so tired of it.
Right? I know it's everywhere. I know.
It's everywhere. Awful. Oh, my God. Like, never mind the phony propaganda fear porn that the government tries to push you. But even in the truth movement, I really get a little bit tired of it. Oh, it's really the end now. We got 4 weeks until the prepare yourself. And you know, all these YouTube channels that promote these salacious headlines, what I call clickbait, they happen to sell survival equipment too, right?
Funniest thing.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit sick of all that fear porn. And well, even before, you know, my attempt to escape Canada, we were working on solutions. You know, that's what we were talking about when I came on your show, how to get prepped and be prepared and become ruthless and cunning and all this other, how to become a good warrior, you know.
Cause how to become a survivor. That's what
how to become about. A survivor, exactly. So, but now my emphasis is more on, look, you do need to be part of a community. And this community is what I would call proof of concept. We were able to, and we are still doing this, accomplish and become self-sufficient in almost all the areas we wanted to. We're self-sufficient in food. We have set up a communications network that is really impressive. We are all in contact with each other, even though the community is spread out across like 12 small towns. And I mean small towns.
Oh, good. Okay, hold on a second. I got to take a break. We'll come back. This is very important for those of you who live in a rural or semi-rural area. Stefan's always been trying to get people to think collectively, not in the communist sense, but collectively in terms of taking care of each other, food, water, sustenance, and ultimately defense. So this is good. We'll come back and revisit this and lay it out in just a minute. Hold on, and then we're going to play his new video a little later. And we continue with Stefan Verstappen. He has always promoted the idea of community relations in terms of strategic survival and trying to organize people. And I'm curious about what you've accomplished. Go ahead, Stefan.
Yeah, so our community is spread out across like 30 miles. And it's all rural, you know, a lot of farms around here. It used to be a tobacco growing country. I remember kids in my high school would spend the summer picking tobacco here, living in the bunkhouse. And when they came back to school in September, they had a lot of money. And like I said, a lot of Amish and Mennonite. And most of the members in the community are Christian. But the reason they joined the community was they left the church, because the churches were all enforcing the mandates. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, if you're going to enforce the mandates, we're not coming to church. Bye-bye. And so that's what happened. And we have a communications network that covers everybody in the community. So everybody's got one of those little Baofeng ham radios. They're like $60 on Amazon. And I've got a couple of ham radios, but it works okay. You know, it works all right. It's got a 5 mile.
What's the range on them? Is that line of sight like FM, or do they bounce around a little bit?
It's basically line of sight. So if you're behind a hill, you're not going to have much luck. Right. But it has approximately 5 miles. But what we did is we got like maps of the county, and we plotted where all the members live, and then we drew like a 5 kilometer or 5 mile radius circle around their homes. And we could see where all those the ranges would overlap. So I could still get a message 30 miles away to the town, you know, way down the road there, by relaying that message from one community member to the next. But now what's happened is everybody's got their ham radio license. I was too busy to go for the course, but I'm going to get mine in October. And a lot of the members now bought base stations as well. and then we've got access to repeaters. Oh. Uh-huh. So we had a meeting 2 weeks ago on a Thursday night, and this was, again, one of the practical meetings. We do a lot of training at our meetings. And one of the members of the communications team held up her little Baofeng radio, and she was talking to a friend in Florida, and it was clear as day.
With a little five-watt handheld Baofeng radio,
she could talk to people in Florida. And it was as clear as what you and I are sounding right now.
Yeah, are you tapped into a big grid then of repeating ham operators all up and down the coast?
Somehow. Yeah, we've got three repeaters that we can access from our location, and those repeaters can send your message all over the world.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, and we've got, like, you know, we've got 20 people that are really – listen, everybody, there's 97 members in our community now, and everybody's got a ham radio, so everybody can talk to each other. We can, you know, when the grid goes down, Jeff, we're going to be screwed in terms of, you know, no internet, no...
That's right. Ham radio should still work, unless you... Well, it might... No, if you get an EMP, it might fry that, too, unless you got a tube-type desktop unit. The old Harman Kardon things.
Yeah, if there was an EMP, but well, we'll see how it goes. You know, if they're going to nuke us all, then they're going to nuke us all. You know, we can prepare as much as we can, Jeff. You know,
that's right.
We have no idea what these lunatics are up to. While we do, we know what they're up to. You kill the white people and enslave all the brown people and then kill them too. So. Yeah. Our communications team is top-notch. I mean, so in addition to the communications team, we got a medical team that is really unbelievable. We got four nurses, and nurses are, you know, I always tell people, and my doctor friend there in California in Santa Barbara always told me, nurses do all the work in the hospital, right? The doctors don't do anything. They sit there filling out insurance claims. And so we got four nurses, we got three paramedics, myself included, first responders, you know, former medics and former firemen. And we got two herbalists. And as a matter of fact, yesterday was one of our meetings. I have an open sore on my leg. I got bit by something and it took a chunk out of me. And it looks like it's all infected. And so yesterday she brought me, you know, an herbal poultice that I can put on it. So we got, you know, herbalists. And these are the kind of herbalists, they can go into the forest and tell you which plants are good for what.
Understood. Very invaluable. It's invaluable. I would urge you to get some Allicin C right away and get on that. And get the Alloderm. That's for external use. It's the same thing, but it's in an aloe gel. That is, it's the world's most effective, broad-spectrum, all-natural antibiotic. It's absolutely fabulous. And no joke.
Yeah, things like that, you know, because, you know, we're assuming there's going to be no medical system once, you know, everything goes down. And listen, is there a medical system now?
Well, that's certainly a very good question. And I don't go anywhere near it unless I have to, which is extremely rarely.
You couldn't pay me to go to a doctor. I don't trust them. I trust them as far as I trust lawyers.
Well, speaking
of
nurses, most nurses, if they're real good, know more than the doctors do. That's not a joke. They end
That's
up teaching
true.
The doctors.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And we also have a Chinese medical doctor, so that's a pretty good medical team.
Oh, good, good. That's a big plus. Yeah, that's an ace in the hole. All right, so, we've got to play your video here at some point. It's
okay.
15 minutes, so we should probably get right on to that.
What,
it's going to
15
take us to
minutes?
The end of the program. Yeah, the diversity video.
Oh, okay.
You want to roll that?
Sure, up to you if you like.
What would you like to do?
Whatever you
want
to do.
Next time you're here.
No, we can roll that now if you like. Up to you.
Well, that'll take up the rest of the program. What else do you want to go in? Let's play it next time you're here.
Okay, next time.
Yeah. Because it's in headlines. People can listen to it now, but we'll do it next time. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. If it's in the headline, they can click on it, listen to it. That'd be great.
Yeah. I'm putting you up as a columnist on the left side of the homepage as well, so they can look for your name, and your videos will be under there. So.
Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, the community does a lot more. Like I said, we're almost completely self-sufficient in food. We have our own grow op. We have a buying co-op where we buy in bulk from the local farmers and we distribute it among the members. You know, we buy 100 chickens at a time from the local farmer. He raises the chickens for us. And of course, they're free-range chickens. There's no antibiotics, no hormones, nothing in the chicken feed. It's all very natural. And then we buy 100 at a time at a discount. We also have lots of fresh eggs. A lot of people are raising chickens. almost every member has a backyard garden. And our garden team, I mean, these people are good. They're like, been farmers for generations. They know everything, you know, how much fertilizer to put in the soil and how to tend the gardens. And, you know, we get a ton of food out of the gardens. And everybody has their own backyard garden. We have chicken eggs. We have rabbits. And we order chickens by the 100 at a time. And the bag-in-box co-op, food co-op. So food-wise, we're almost completely self-sufficient. I would say we are self-sufficient.
Not many people can say that.
I know, but, you know, because you're working as a community, this is why I tell people, like, listen, I got about a year's supply of food, me personally, okay? Mm-hmm. All in Mylar zip bags, all ready to go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the people that lived through the collapse there in Venezuela, I was reading stories about there, and one guy said, yeah, there were people that were preppers. And, you know, they had a year's supply of food.
Yeah.
But that nonsense carried on for like 5 years.
So yes, it did.
And
what did he say about the preppers who at least had made a reasonable attempt, like a year? How did they fare? Did he outline any kind of result profile?
No, they all were starving at the end of the year, the same as everybody else was starving.
Got it. All right.
Right? Like, how are you going to replenish? Okay, it's good to get a year's supply of food. And listen, I've been preaching that story to everybody for the last 20 years. So, year's supply of food, medicine, guns, ammo, radios, medicines. But what happens if this goes on for more than a year?
Mm-hmm.
Then where are you going to get your food? So, listen, we live out in the rural country. We have close friendships with all the farmers, because, you know, there's 96 members, most of them born and raised in the area. They know all the farmers. The farmers know them and trust them. We do grow our own food. We raise our own chickens. We raise our own rabbits. A few of the members raise pigs and goats. You know, just a small hobby farm, nothing big and industrial, but still. And but we have close relationships to the local farmers, which is what I've been advising people for a long time now. Go to the farmer's market. Get to know the people that produce food that live nearby you.
Yes.
Make friends with them. You know, that was my whole the cookie lady strategy. I think I explained that once on your show.
One time, where, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, you go and you bake, two dozen chocolate chip cookies. And you put three in a little brown paper bag and go to the farmer's market. Then when you buy something from the local farmers, you say, thank you very much. Here, have a cookie. And within a month, everybody will call you the cookie lady. Mm-hmm. And I've had people that wrote me back and said, your cookie strategy worked perfectly. I went to the farmer's market. I gave them all a cookie. Every time I bought something, sure enough, everybody's calling me the cookie lady or the cookie man. But guess what? They'll remember who you are. So when the grocery stores... Huh?
You bet. You give somebody a delicious cookie, they don't forget. I got it.
Exactly.
I like cookies. I know.
And so also it sets a precedent. You're giving something. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when the food chain collapses and the grocery stores are empty and people are eating tree bark, a lot of them are going to be running to the farmers. Can you send me some food? But
you know what's coming back, don't you?
What?
Cannibalism. That will happen in the cities. You know this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in the big cities, yeah. You got to get out of the cities, folks. That's why I'm in this small town. I'm really happy in this small town. You know, I lived in Toronto my whole life. I walked down the street. Nobody said hello. I've lived here now for a year and a half. I walk down the street. There's a dozen people that know me.
That's a nice feeling.
And they all wave.
You have roots.
And say hello.
You have roots. You have friends. This is good. Very nice. As you all can tell, Stefan is the maestro of true preparation, because that has to include a group of neighbors working together. And the better the networking is, the better and the safety, all of it, it all works together. And he is the man. And you can watch his videos, go to his website, and you'll understand. This is really a fascinating conversation, because people could still work together. They still can come up with a common purpose and a goal and work on it en masse in a group. This is really encouraging to hear. Very good.
Thank you, Jeff. No, and that's why I'm so happy for this, because, listen, I needed to see how this could actually work. So this is not theory. You know, we all have theories on how to work together, this and that. And then most people can't accomplish this. They can't form communities.
No.
I get that all the time. I tried. Can't find people that are willing to cooperate. And one thing
part of it,
hold
on. I think part of it is you, because you have a demeanor and an air about you that is friendly, and you make it sound like it's doable. It's not a big project. It is a big project, but you make it sound like it's within the grasp of anybody if they simply go about it intelligently. And I'm sure that's part of it, part of your success, your formula. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's awfully nice of you to say that.
True.
If I could credit it to anything, I would credit it to I keep my ego under control.
Right.
You know, everybody always has opinions. Oh, boy, I'm so sick of everybody's goddamn opinion.
I'm sure.
You know, everybody's blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't do that. You know, I play a certain role in the community. I'm part of the medical team. I teach the first aid courses. Mm-hmm. I train other members in the community on emergency first aid. And I take part in all the activities. One of our members got married last month, and she wanted to sing a song to her husband. And I said, oh, well, I know that five other members of our community are musicians. And I mean, they play at the Philharmonic, a cellist, a violinist, a bass player, me on guitar. And so we had a couple of rehearsals, you know, out in the farmyard, out in the farmstead, out on the porch on a nice summer night. We're rehearsing a few songs. So I got to play at her wedding, but not only that, I officiated at the wedding. So now I'm marrying people, Jeff.
Reverend Verstappen, I get it. Okay.
But
I married a few couples. I was a member of the Universal Life Church when that first came out, and I performed a few services, and I stopped because I felt guilty. Watching the divorce rates, I said, you know, why am I doing this? They're going to end up in divorce court anyhow, most of them. So I stopped. But anyway.
Well, the couple I married were the couple that put me up at their home. They have four children. The two youngest ones are like 6 and 7, a girl and a boy. And after I'd been living there for like a month and a half, the little girl came up to me, hugged me, and she said, I love you.
Uh-huh.
So now they're my grandchildren. And I only live 5 minutes away by bicycle. So I drop by there all the time, 2-3 times a week for dinner, to say hello, to play with the kids, the grandkids. Mind you, I can only handle them for about an hour. Mm-hmm. It's good to be a grandparent. You can have fun with them, play with them for an hour, then you can leave. But, you know, it's part of the family. And so they'd been living together for 10 years, and they had 2 kids together. And so I think this marriage might have a chance. So I agreed to do it. But, you know, and then the whole community came together for it. It was potluck dinner. The potluck dinners we have, Jeff, unbelievable. It's a banquet. And we had a Christmas dinner last year. Everybody came together. We pooled the money from – we have a little kitty. Like, there's no membership fees for the community, and nothing we do we charge for. So all the courses, all the training, all the events, all of it is free. Getting your ham radio license, free. Taking first aid training, free. Going to Christmas dinner, free. You know, and all we do is we all volunteer a little bit of our time and a little bit of our money. And it's just, I mean, it's really not much. So we had a kitty, and they said, listen, should we take money from the kitty, buy 3 turkeys from one of the local farmers? And again, people in our community know all the farmers. Whatever you want, we can get it direct from the farm and you know, cut out the middleman grocery store. So they bought 3 turkeys, and okay, who wants to volunteer to cook the turkeys? And, you know, 3 members, well, 6 members raised their hand, and 3 members took it on themselves to cook the turkeys. And then we had a big dinner at one of the local little churches. You know, this is a small town church, you know, it's just a little church. But, you know, in the basement, they usually have like a kitchen and a big dining hall and things like that. So we had the big Christmas dinner there. Everybody brought their kids. We had so much food. I got a doggy bag at the end of the night with so much chicken I ate for 4 days, you know, just from the doggy bag. I mean, this is what you got to do. You work together like that. When you have so many people all working together for the same cause, feed each other.
How many people would you say are actively in the group, in your group?
I would say 60 are very active. And the other
these are adults.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other 36 are not as active, but they're still part of the community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we also have our own security team. There's where I live in this small town, I got 3 other guys with firearms and experience. We can get on the radio. You know, there's 15 guys. I don't like the looks of them. Coming up on my front door. Well, yeah, we'll go out there. So security, and this is what this guy said, that the one that lived through the Bosnian war there. He said people that are on their own, they don't survive. They don't live. He said, it's only people that have, you know, 5-6 people together with guns that had any chance of surviving. So we got 5-6 people with guns, and we'll help each other out. And we've done other things like Meals on Wheels. A few times, members of the community, you know, they had to go into the hospital, and they came back. They're not feeling that great. Can't go grocery shopping. We brought it up at the meeting. Anybody can go over there and bring them a meal. Sure enough, 8 hands up in the air, 10 hands up in the air. I'll bring them a meal on Monday. Who can do Tuesday? Okay, Susan, you're on Tuesday. Okay, Wednesday. Bob and Wendy. Okay, Bob and Wendy. So we provided them a week's worth of food. No charge. You know, everybody just volunteers their time to cook it and drive it over to their place. And whatever it costs in groceries, well, they donated it. So, Jeff, you know, working with almost no money.
Got it.
Right? Look at what we accomplished. Everybody's
what is
fed.
What is your website URL, Stefan? I want to make sure everybody
ChinaStrategies.com is my main website.
ChinaStrategies.com, okay.
And my other one is formingcommunities.com. And that deals obviously with how to form communities. It talks about my online course. I have an online course with Autonomy Online University. And I have a lot of information on formingcommunities.com. And so, Jeff,
very
look,
good.
With no money, just pure cooperation and the generosity of the individual
goodwill.
Members,
yeah.
we've taken care of everything.
All right. It can be done. It can be done.
It can be
All
done.
All right, Stefan, thank you. That was really good and very, I think, encouraging to a lot of people. We'll get you back here in a couple, 3 weeks and play that video and pursue this further. Thank you.
Anytime, Jeff. Thank you again for having me back on. It's been great talking to you.
You bet. Same here. All right. Good night, Stefan.
Good night, Jeff.
All right. Indeed. Here we are, a Friday weekend again. Take care of yourselves and do think about trying to prepare. I know it's difficult for a lot of you who have enough trouble going to the grocery store to buy food. But even if it's just a little bit, you can start building a bank. Just build. Put a little bit aside here and there. Look in that garage, see if there's something you can sell that you don't need anymore. That's another way to try and raise some money. Have a good weekend. Have a safe weekend. Thank you for being here. We'll talk soon on Monday or certainly over the weekend on the network. Be well.